Our topic today is how to develop disciple makers, part one. And just by introduction, let me give you an idea of what we will be covering in the three parts of this workshop. The first session today will be discussing the overall view of the concept of disciple making, the basic framework as far as a multiplying ministry. And then in the next two sessions, we will be discussing some of the specific aspects of training individual people, some of the problems that we encounter, and some of the ideas and suggestions that we can use in being effective in making disciple makers. This will be a workshop session during these parts, and it won't be all lecture, so we'll have parts of lecture, and we'll have some discussion, we'll have working together, in order that we can all benefit from each other's experience. Anytime we talk about disciples and disciple makers, we have to go back to our overall mission, which we're all familiar with. But in order to put it all in the right perspective, I'd like for us just to review briefly our basic framework that we consider. And the first thing that we consider is our mission, and we find that, of course, in Matthew 28:18-20. And Jesus came and said to them, "All authority in heaven on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, to the close of the age." And any Christian work is related somehow to the Great Commission. And specifically in the Navigators, of course, we're related to the precise objective of making disciples. Now, in our workshop here on disciple makers, I've just finished being involved in the Divisional Directors Conference in December at the Glen. And during this time, we had an evaluation of the last 3 years' ministry and also made our plans for the next 3 years. And you've seen the results of that in your notebook for the conference here is under the prayer requests. A number of the prayer requests have come out of that conference. But it's very interesting to me, not only in considering the Divisional Directors Conference, that as we evaluated the last 3 years, all the different aspects of the Navigator ministry, we felt that we were very successful in getting new representatives and the number of missionaries we'd sent out, the basic ministry. But the one area that we felt, if there was any area that was weak, it was in the area of disciple makers. Not converts, not disciples, not reps, but disciple makers. And it's interesting because in our areas out in Pan that I've been involved with for the last 5 years, it seems like in all of our objectives that somehow the hardest one is the disciple makers. And this has interesting implications when you think about it, and yet the heart of what we're doing is disciple makers. And so this is one of the reasons we need to just share together and learn what we can, because one thing I've discovered is that if you have any weak area in this whole progression from evangelism through maturity, you'll have a gap somewhere along the line in your final product. So we want to make sure that we have a well-rounded, well-balanced ministry. So our mission is the Great Commission, and its disciples and disciple makers. Now, the second thing in this overall framework, we have a mission, and then we also have a method that we feel here in the NAVS that God has given us specifically to major on. And this method is multiplication. 2 Timothy 2:2. "And what you have heard from me before many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." And of course, 2 Timothy 2:2 you can't apply that unless you apply it in context. The context, of course, verse 1 is that we cannot train someone unless we're strong ourselves. In other words, it's first our life, and then secondly, it's the ministry. You then, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. Now, this method is not new to the Apostle Paul. He got this from Christ Himself. As you recall in Mark 3:14, where Christ called 12 to come out and to be with Him, that He might send them forth to preach. Now, one of the things that we have to keep in mind in doing our ministry is the balance between the broad ministry and the ministry in depth. And it seems to me that Jesus Christ had the perfect balance. He was able to minister to people on a broad front, and at the same time, He was able to select 12 men and pour His life into them. But the heart of this method is a man. And one of the problems of having a workshop or a seminar or any kind of thing on disciple making is it's easy to go away with the method, but really the heart of it is the man and the person. It's really the heart of it's two men. It's your life and the life of the person that you're helping. And it's interesting to me that you know, when Christ selected His men that He was going to really pour His life into, we find that He went out and prayed all night and then chose the 12. And it seems that it's very important in training men and making disciples to get the right person to pour your life into. Now, in this method, I'd like to go into that in detail, because this will serve the background of what we'll be talking about the rest of our workshops. But before I do that, let me go on to the third thing, just so we get the whole basic. We have our mission, we have our method, and then we have the third thing, and that's our motivation. And we have to have all these things working. Our motivation, 2 Corinthians 5:4. For the love of Christ controls us, because we are convinced that one has died for all, therefore all have died. The love of Christ. And we love Christ because He first loved us, in 1 John 4:19. And when it comes to this matter of disciple making, we can take all the tools and various things that we have, but we have to wrap it all up in a heart of prayerful love and concern for this man that we want to see become a disciple maker. And as a matter of fact, you can't put exact percentages, but I like to think that, in this process of making disciple makers, developing disciple makers, that about 80% of it is heart and love and concern and just your life. And about 20% of it is the method or technique that you use. We need to be strong on heart, love, motivation, concern for the person. Otherwise, we'll have a very sterile type ministry. We'll turn out a bunch of robots, little mechanical men that can repeat after us exactly the right words. And after we leave, they may or may not keep repeating those words. If we had the time, it would be interesting to go around and just find out what played the most important role in your own life to make you a disciple maker. Was it the course you took? Was it the seminar you went to? What was it that made you this? And how long did it take to do it? I know we had our disciple makers together in Sydney. There were about 15 of them. And we were talking about how long it took for a guy to become a disciple. Just to be a disciple, from the time he became a convert to disciple. And everyone was throwing out rather optimistic lengths of time, rather short amounts of time. So I just stopped, and we just went around because we just had a few. And I said, now, how long did it take you from the time that you first heard about, you know, really living for Christ? Not until you became a disciple, before, until you just got serious about becoming a disciple. In other words, the length of time you knew what to do until you even got started and went around. And the average length of time was about a year and a half. And then they all, they were thinking this man here should be a disciple in just a few months. Well, perhaps under different circumstances, they could have gotten down to business sooner. But I know in my own case, it took me a year to learn the B rations. I was regular, one verse a quarter. But I do feel that there's something in here where God, through His Holy Spirit, does a work in the life of a man. And sometimes this takes time. And we can't program that out. In other words, we have to make sure that in whatever framework we're developing disciple makers, that we keep in mind that it's God who's making the disciple maker. And what that means is that in our program, and God's using us, we have to make sure that we don't rule out the opportunity for God to work. And sometimes this just takes time. And it's not just time, but this matter of prayerful concern, the heart for the man. Let me just illustrate by sharing about the man who followed me up. As I look back now, if I look at it in sort of an academic sense and, you know, in a workshop sense, you know, as a sort of an example to present as to what you should do, I say he did everything wrong. In other words, it's not a good example. On the other hand, when I look at it and say, was he successful in following me up? Just, you know, apart from trying to present it and make it sound good, I'd say he was very successful. As a matter of fact, the thing that's interesting is that there was very little on what I call, you know, structure or mechanics. Because back in those days, it wasn't emphasized all that much. I mean, we just didn't do it that much in the Navigators. But the one thing is that all that we did, it was wrapped up in a great big package of prayerful love and concern. And I spent a lot of time with him. I mean, he spent with me, or I don't know, we just were together. I don't know whether we knew what we were doing. But we were together. And in that sharing of his life, there were things that I came away with that, as I look back now, probably are more important than the mechanics. Things like a real heart to know God. Just by being around him, I went away saying, here was a man who really had a heart to know God. And it's been a challenge to me ever since. Or an earnestness for God in prayer. He was the type of guy that would take me home from his house. I remember one morning we got back to my room at college, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, about time, boy, I was thinking about getting in, getting some sleep before I got up for my 6 o'clock quiet time. So let's have some prayer. You know, and we prayed for an hour. I mean, that was the type of person he was. Or a real hunger and thirst for the Word of God. Not that he was telling me you need to have a hunger and thirst for the Word of God. I was just around him, and he had a hunger and thirst for the Word of God. But I began to see that it was important to have a hunger and thirst for the Word of God. Or a concern for other people. Just riding along in the car with him and seeing a person along in need, and his stopping and doing something about it. Things like that. It's the type of thing you can't really program. You can't just say, well, okay, tomorrow we're going to go out and find someone in need and help them, you know. It has to come as an expression of his life. Now I feel, in meditating on 2 Timothy, that's why Paul in 2 Timothy 2 put in verse 1 before verse 2. That we have to be strong. It's our life that we communicate. And I know I find some people who are concerned about this matter of disciple making because they don't feel like they know enough to make disciple makers. I think, well, yes, we can learn more. And we'll be talking about things we can learn, things that we should know. Nevertheless, I have a strong feeling that these people who are saying that, the ones who are godly and who walk with God, just their exposure, their being around these people does something in terms of disciple making. And it does something that sometimes we're not even aware of. Now, I'm a strong believer in knowing what we're doing in our ministry and evaluating our ministry to know how many disciples we have, to know where we stand, to know where we should be going, to be good managers of our area. But just in terms of putting this all in perspective, and the reason I'm taking some time now to put it in perspective is we will tend to be talking about more of the mechanical or structural things in the subsequent sessions. But I don't want us to forget that that's just a small part of the whole picture. And I can list people that I feel that at the time I knew I was making a disciple out of him. He was my man, this type of person. But it's been very interesting to me. It's been some 15 or 16 years now. And God occasionally opens up a little window of truth to help me keep on target. And it's refreshing to have those little glimpses into how God sees things and little, you know, experiences of my own life that go along with the Scripture. But one of those has to do with this matter of this lesson that it's God who does the training. It's God who does the work through me. Now, I can say that, you know, here are some guys that were my men. And some of them I could name off. You would know who they are. Because they're around the Navs. But what's been interesting, and just recently, just in the last 3 or 4 months, I had a person come up to me and say, well, I don't think I've ever told you this, but as I look back on the early days of my Christian life, I feel that probably you had the most important influence in my living for Christ. Well, I didn't even consider this person one of my men at the time, type of thing. Nevertheless, just in the experiences of walking with God, God was doing a work. And a number of things have happened like this. I remember on one occasion I got a letter from a fellow that I'd been spending a little bit of time with. And about 2 years later he wrote me and said, by the way, you remember that night we were talking about assurance of salvation and I told you that I was a Christian, and et cetera, et cetera. He said, I don't think I ever bothered to tell you this, but after we finished that night, I went back to my room and got down on my knees and prayed and invited Christ to come into my heart for the first time. Well, see, it never occurred to me that I had a part in leading him to Christ. But it didn't really matter. In other words, I was just doing what I felt God wanted me to do. Now, like I say, we should know people we've led to Christ that we're specifically helping to become disciples. But in this overall picture, you know, God is doing far greater things than we can ever imagine. Let me give you another example of how God is at work. Doug Sparks and Noel Nelson and Jim White and I went to West and South Africa in October to look into some countries and survey for the Navigator Ministry to develop our Africa strategy. We went with the intention of figuring out how we could get started a Navigator Ministry in West Africa, in Ghana and Nigeria. But see, God is at work, and God's got some plans for some of these countries. And when we got to Lagos, Nigeria, we found that there's already a Navigator study started there. We didn't even know about it. And believe it or not, a girl is in charge. A young British secretary who was trained, was part of the NAVS in London, prayed and felt that God wanted her to go overseas. So she got a, she was part of the Foreign Service. So she put in a request and got a job in Lagos, Nigeria, the office of the British High Commissioner. And she got there, and she's got a dozen young Africans and Navigator Bible Studies. And we went out one evening to a Bible study group. This is not her group, but just a layman there has 200 Africans out to his home for a teaching session once a fortnight. And I got in a little bit late and went in and sat down at the end of this bench. And after the meeting was over, the African next to me, the very first thing he said was, "When will I get my TMS?" I thought, good. You know, here I was, just arrived here in the middle of Nigeria, just plopped into Nigeria, happened to go over to this Bible study, 200 Africans here, and the first question he asked me is, "When can I get my TMS?" Well, it turned out that he was one of the guys in this girl's Bible study group. He's one of these dozen or so young people. And they'd sent off to London for their TMS, and it hadn't arrived yet. And he was quite eager to get it. He thought maybe I could speed it on its way or something. They'd introduced us as the navigators, and he thought, boy, he ought to know when I can get that TMS. But the point is that God is at work. See, God's doing something here in what we might think is sort of an unorthodox way. But it could be that God might use this to open up a ministry throughout West Africa. We need to make sure that as we think about disciple makers, that God is doing it, and that our motivation is a heart of love for the individual person like he has. He's concerned about each individual person. Now, I'd like for us to go back now to 2 Timothy 2:2 and just to think about the implications of this in our ministry. Now, each of you are responsible for a ministry, and as you think about this ministry, we want to think about the different aspects of the ministry and how all this relates to disciple making. But 2 Timothy 2:2 looks something like this little diagram here. Here's my diagram or visual representation of what 2 Timothy 2:2 looks like. Now, first, it starts off with a new man. Some of this is a little bit weak. Let's see, Dan, could you flip off this first set of lights here? Maybe you could see it just a little bit better. The heart of 2 Timothy 2:2, what it's all about, the thing that is the heart of our method, has to do with multiplication and reproduction. And what this diagram will illustrate is basically this multiplication cycle. And we want to discuss it just a bit because as a framework to talking about our area ministry and how we fit it all in together. But keep in mind that we can't completely compartmentalize the ministry. I mean, all these things really are going on and they're interrelated. And we Americans love to compartmentalize things, and being an engineer, I love to draw diagrams. So putting the two together, we'll talk about the multiplication cycle, but perhaps it'll help us visualize what the ministry is about. Now, I know that you all use different diagrams in all of the ministry, and they all can, you know, are related to this basic concept. But just thinking now, as a staff man, well, let me use my illustration back when I went to Raleigh, North Carolina. You know, here's a representative going in this case, to a brand new area. Nobody. All we knew is that God had called us to go there. We didn't know whether anybody in town had ever heard of the Navigators. We did find out later that there had been people that had been praying that the Navigators would come to Raleigh for a number of years, and we turned out to be the answer to their prayer. But when you go into an area, first, if you're going to have multiplication, you have to start out with a new man. You can't multiply something you don't have. So the first stage of the ministry is evangelism. Your goal, you can't see it too well here, is a convert or a young Christian. Sometimes when you're out doing evangelism, you meet someone who may be a Christian already, but who hasn't learned how to really grow and mature, but they want help in how to grow and mature. Okay, after you get this new man, then what's the next thing you do? What do you do when you get a guy who becomes a Christian or wants to grow as a Christian? What's the next stage of the ministry? Follow up. Very good. Okay, we go on to this stage, the follow-up stage. And our goal in this stage is to help that person come from a convert or a young Christian, help him grow up to become a disciple. And you're familiar, of course, with the profile of a disciple, because, and this gives us specifically what we're aiming at, what we're trying to do. Then, what are we interested in? After the person becomes a disciple, then we move into another area, disciple making. And here our emphasis is on helping the person become a disciple maker, developing that person to become a disciple maker. And then the next stage is what we've called here LDM, or leadership, leaders of disciple makers. This is the leadership stage. Now, the way this multiplication cycle works, and the reason it's a cycle here, is that in the first stages, you get a new man. Even as a young Christian, he may lead someone else to Christ. That's what this dotted line here represents. In other words, he may, even as a young Christian himself, even before he's a disciple, he may lead someone to Christ and get this thing beginning to start again. And by the time he's a disciple maker, in order to become a disciple maker, he has to get a new man and follow him up. And then the leader of disciple makers is the person who has the ability to lead and to manage this growing ministry so that he can keep the whole thing going on a sustained basis. And the heart of successful multiplication is to be able to carry on the ministry in a sustained manner. And the thing that I've discovered is that unless a person continues to grow and mature, is that if he's in a going ministry, he may have some ministry, may lead a man to Christ. But if he's put out on his own too prematurely without any further help, that may be as far as he goes. And you have met a lot of people who've gotten to a certain level of growth and maturity, and it seems like they've just plateaued. Their ministry hasn't grown and multiplied. And what 2 Timothy 2:2, that's what this represents, is all about, is a sustained multiplication. So that you can take a young Englishman like Joe Simmons in 1953, who at the challenge of Dawson Trotman and a real call and conviction from God, moved his wife and two children, quit his job at 37 years of age, and moved halfway around the world to New Zealand with the great promise from the Navigators that he could just go do that and it'd be all right, but he wouldn't be staffed or wouldn't get any support or anything else. But he could go move to New Zealand if he felt God wanted him to do that. And he did, and he moved there. That was in 1953. Now, the reason I tell the story of Joe Simmons is because it's quite a contrast to the way we make disciples and do multiplication in our areas today. We have a big work going. God is blessed. And a number of times each year, you're together in seminars or staff meetings or your regional directors through to give you fellowship, encouragement, and help. But it's interesting to see Joe Simmons, who went to New Zealand in 1953, he did not even see one other navigator of any type, sort, or description for 8 years. And there was not another navigator to come and work with him for another 15 years. In other words, he was there almost 15 years before there was another navigator just to co-labor with him. But what happened? When that other navigator arrived, there were hundreds of young men and women in New Zealand and Australia because of the life of Joe Simmons. See, his ministry had been multiplied. Now, I know because I was that guy who went there. I was the second guy to go. This is the type of thing that we want to see. Now, I'm not advocating that we just take people and throw them out somewhere, but I am saying that we want the type of person and the quality of life that if he does get out there somewhere, he will multiply and make disciples. And this represents the levels of maturity in order to get a person who's able to go out and have a sustained ministry. So what does that mean to me as an area representative going to Raleigh, North Carolina? Or for you in your area of ministry? It seems to me that what it means is that while you're doing all the other things that you have to do, whatever it might be, that there are four things that you want to make sure that you have going on in your area of ministry. And that is, first, that you're doing evangelism. Second, that you're doing follow-up. Third, that you're training disciple makers. And fourth, that you're training some leaders. Now, when you go into a brand new area, when you go into Iran here for too long, well, you may not be able to do all four of those things at the same, you know, to start with. So what do? Well, you get out there and do the evangelism. And when you get the converts, you do the follow-up. And what you're working towards is getting all four of those things going. Now, the reason it's important to have that in mind is that some people, because of their temperament or interests, get all interested, involved in maybe evangelism. Boy, they're evangelizing everything that moves. But you don't get sustained multiplication by doing just evangelism. You have to have the training going on as well. Follow-up and training. But you get someone else who is really a trainer and they never evangelize, you can immediately see the problem. You won't have anybody to train. To have a good, balanced area ministry, you have to have all those things going on simultaneously. Now, I grew up here in the Navigator ministry and a collegiate ministry, and I don't know how you do it today. But back when I was doing it, we sort of thought in terms, well, first semester we'll do evangelism, and the second semester we'll do follow-up. Well, that's not too bad as far as a general thrust. But one thing, when I went to New Zealand, Australia, their school years are all different. And it turns out that the students are only on campus about 26 weeks out of the year, or 6 months out of the 12. And it didn't really fit to do evangelism the first half of the year and follow up the second half of the year. We had such a little time during the year, we had to do evangelism. We had to do all we could every day. As a matter of fact, not just during those 26 weeks, but we had to figure out how to keep this thing going all through the summer, too, to make it a 52-week year and not just a 26-week year. But in doing that, I found out that we need to have evangelism going and follow-up going and be able to do it both at the same time. Now, it is true that we can emphasize one a bit more than the other, but I feel that all year round we have to have all these things going in order to have a good, balanced, effective disciple-making ministry. Otherwise, we're going to have some generation gaps. And when I say generation gaps, we'll have a period of time where we don't have an input of disciples or disciple-makers wherever our gap happens to be. In other words, if you have all four of these going at once, what will happen is that you'll have a continual ministry that you're continually getting new converts, you're continually seeing new disciples come up, you're continually seeing new disciple makers, you're continually getting new leaders. And this is the type of area ministry that we want to have, is continual production, sustained production. But keep in mind, again, that it's God who's doing all this. And we're just the instruments or the vessels that God is using. Now, let's see. We got down, our goal here is a disciple. Our goal here is disciple maker. Our goal here is a person that we've been calling in the Western Division a leader of disciple makers. And this leader of disciple makers can either be a staff person or it can be a layman. And the person who, the leader of disciple maker who's NAV staff, starts out being a potential contact point, then a contact point, and then he becomes a representative. But then we also have these same men who are leaders, who are capable of carrying on a sustained multiplication, who will not become NAV staff, who feel that God's not called them to that, but who are laymen. And we have a designation for them in the Western Division. But the point is that they have the maturity and all the ingredients it takes to carry on a sustained multiplying ministry. And if this person goes out to some place, you know, give them some time and go out there and see them, there'll be some people around. Sustained multiplication. Now, in this process, these first two stages of the ministry, the evangelism and follow-up, are more along the line of recruiting. In other words, the thrust or the focus has to do with more with recruiting. And the second two down here, these two have to do more with training. Now, the reason I make this distinction is it makes a lot of difference what you do with the guy. If you have, and the reason where this all came about is when I went to Sydney, some of the fellows there who had not had a lot of experience in making disciple makers, you know, they had heard some things from some conferences, and they'd pieced together all, you know, tape. They'd hear a tape here, and a speaker would come through. And boy, and when they got something, they latched onto it and applied it zealously. As a matter of fact, some of those fellows down there, I went over and spoke at a conference. You know, 2 or 3 years later, he was telling me, you know, that conference, that message you spoke on, you know, the third point on such and I was going to say, yeah, I've got to give that again. Would you give me the outline? I mean, they don't listen to a tape once. It's over and over and over. They devoured it and learned it and applied it. But the one thing was missing, that they came up with one way to do the ministry. So whether a person was in the follow-up stage or whether he was in the disciple-making stage, he got the same treatment. Well, the problem with that is that the young babe in Christ, who may be 2 or 3 months old, may not quite be ready for the hard line training that this person down here needs. And so we need to make sure that when we're working with men, that we know where they are and then tailor our approach and our training to him, to the man. Not to our program, but to the man. And up here, the recruiting aspect has to do more, it's on his terms. In other words, I'm trying to draw him in. I'm trying to recruit him. So, I'm going out of my way to help him. Like Bible study. Say he doesn't show up for Bible study. Sorry, you're out. Don't come back. No, I'm going out of my way. Well, what was the problem? Can we help, you know, draw them in? But then there comes a time when something has to change, and that's down here. And that's this X right here. At this point, what I call a commitment to training. And the person down here, in order to get training in this stage, needs to have first come to a point of commitment to training. Now, I've gone to a few areas, not in your divisions. Most of you are from the Northern and Southern Division. But in a few of the areas that I've visited in, this is what would happen. We'd talk to some person who about, you know, who are the men that you're working with? And they'd list off a few men. Well, how long have you been working with these people? Well, the story was that they didn't have any new disciple makers. They had been doing man-to-man. They had been training. In other words, they were going through the process of doing what they thought they need to do in order to get disciple makers. But then a year or 2 years later, they didn't have any. And one of the problems, there are a number of reasons why this is true. But one of the reasons is they were training men who didn't want to be trained. In other words, as they described these people to them, they were training them in this stage, but the person himself was still back up here. In other words, he had never made this commitment to training. And it's really hard to train somebody who's not committed to getting training. As a matter of fact, we made a very interesting discovery down there back here in this stage, you know, trying to get all our converts into this follow-up stage. See, that's our goal. We want all of our converts to get over and to be in the follow-up stage. Now, we haven't learned how. I haven't figured out. It seems like we get attrition at each level. But that's our goal. But one thing that we discovered down in Sydney is that it's much easier to follow up a genuine convert than it is just a decision who may not be a convert. We found that those people who are genuinely converted are much more responsive to follow-up. That was a real help to us. But the same thing's true here. And I noticed this, and you know, there's a good part to this, actually. And a lot of the nav areas I go around to, the good part is that we're so zealous, we're so eager to see these people grow. We think they're, you know, we give them all the benefit of the doubt. You know, we have them way up here, whether they want to be there or not. And that part's good. You know, the fact that we are interested. We want to see them grow. We want to see them mature. But we want to make sure that it doesn't cloud our judgment so that we're using the wrong approach. Now, I'm getting some exposure to what it means to be a parent. And our little girl is almost 3 years old. But I have friends of mine who have children at other ages, but I've discovered there's a lot of difference in how you go about training a 3-year-old child than a 13-year-old child. I think the same thing spiritually. There's a lot of difference in how you train a 3-month-old Christian and how you train a 3 or 4 or 5-year-old Christian. So this is the framework that we'll be talking about during our time here. And I'd like to give you just three principles for effective disciple making. And these three principles apply in each of these three stages. So if you can keep clear in your mind what stage you're in and get these three principles operating for each stage, I think you'll end up with a good area ministry. Of course, it's much easier to talk about than it is to do. The first one is to know your goal. What are you really aiming at? Now, I believe, you know, all of you do know your goal, and that's why you're on the staff. And we won't need to spend a whole lot of time on this. But just to see how it applies to our multiplication cycle, okay, take the evangelism stage. Well, let's just have a little time here. What is your goal, okay, in evangelism, in the first stage? What you, okay, to see the person become a Christian. And then in the follow-up stage, what's your goal? Okay, to see him become a disciple and on around. And we have, by the way, profiles. We've worked on this. We've tried to crystallize to get it down to something specific so we're all talking about the same thing. So when we talk about what a disciple is, we're all talking about the same thing. When we talk about a disciple maker, we're all talking about the same thing. But we know what our goal is. Then the second principle is that we need to know our man. And this is much harder than knowing your goal. How do you know your man? I don't know how much thought you've given to it, but it's been something that's intrigued me for a long time, that we use this where we talk about knowing people. And I've thought about, well, do I really know that person? Or what does it really mean to know my man? And I think it means that we have to know some things about the man. We have to know his background. I think we have to know his interests. We have to know his attitudes. We have to know his reactions. We have to know how he thinks about things. And when you start analyzing some of that, some of it you cannot get without having just been around and lived life with that man. For example, knowing his reactions. Now you can come in and say, okay, we're meeting Thursday at 2 o'clock, our regular weekly man-to-man time. Okay, have a seat, fine. We'll pray together. Okay, now react. You know, life is just not that way. The way you find out his reactions is that you're with him when you're driving down. He's driving down the street, and someone races across in front of him, and he reacts somehow, for better or for worse. And a lot of that has to do with just living life and being involved with him, and being involved with him in a variety of types of experiences. I discovered when I was in New Zealand that I had two men that I had time to have a weekly Bible study with, and so I, over a period of a year, I spent quite a bit of time with them. Every week I had a lunchtime Bible study with them. But at the end of that year, and the reason I only did that was because they weren't my key people, and I didn't have time to do anything else. But it did was very clear to me at the end of that year that I didn't really know them. In other words, I knew them in just one type of situation, my leading them in a little Bible study group. But I didn't know them in terms of working together or doing sports together or just having recreation together. In other words, a variety of types of experiences. And to really get to know a man, we have to know him in a variety of experiences. And then the third principle is to know how to train your man. In other words, you know your man and you know your goal, where you're headed, but then you have to know how to train him, what to do to help him get from where he is to where you'd like to see him be. And if you get those three things going in each of the areas, then you'll be well on your way to having an effective ministry and producing the type of men that can carry on a sustained multiplication. Now that's the basic background, the framework. We'll come back and refer to this. And what we want to do during the next two workshops is to spend some time on talking more specifically and discussing together just exactly what do we do, particularly in making the guy who's a disciple maker down here. And helping that person right there develop into a disciple maker. What do we do? How do we go about it? Now, for the rest of our time here, I'd like for us just to have a little time to share together. And what I'd like for us to think about and discuss together, what we'll do, as soon as I tell you the assignment, we'll divide up into little small groups here and spend a few minutes just discussing. But I'd like for each of the groups to list what you consider the three or four main problems that you see either in your own life or men that you have, you know, some of your key men who are also working on making disciple makers. What are the three or four main problems that you find that keep people from developing disciple makers? What problems do we have? What's the difficulty? What's the hindrance? In other words, we've found that Worldwide and the Navigators, our biggest problem, you know, in all these stages of the ministry, you know, as I went around the four circles, evangelism, we're doing great. New disciples, we're doing great. Leaders, new reps, doing great. But disciple makers, that's our weak point. Now, why is that the weak point? So, divide up into groups of about five or six, and we'll take a few minutes, and then we'll have one person jot down your three or four things, and then we'll share them together. Go. Quickly, some of the conclusions you've come to give us a little bit of a feel of what are some of the things that we're facing in obstacles to this matter of getting more disciple makers. So let's just throw out some things, and I'll jot them down here, and we'll see how we go. Okay, start over here.
Mark, I wonder if, you know, in the overall objectives of the Navigators, are we taking into consideration that when a man is moved out of an area into a contact point, that we're taking one of our resources, our main resource for making disciples, putting him out into a new area where he has to start all over, you know, in evangelism.
Okay.
Are we taking that into consideration just as to, you know, why we're not hitting our goal in this area?
Okay, what we want to do here is not, in the next session we'll get in discussing some of these things, but it is a factor, this matter of moving men around does affect disciple making. So we'll put that down about moving men around.
Assuming men are further along than they are.
Okay. I'll put down unrealistic evaluation of progress. Okay.
Not having a ground-based disciple in which to select.
Okay. Not having a broad base of disciples.
Time factor.
Okay, specific. What part of the time factor?
Just after the first brought up, is adequate time to spend with
men. Okay, not having adequate time to spend with men. Inadequate time to spend with men.
On both parts, I'm just going to be student.
Okay, that would come into availability then, also, wouldn't it?
hardship would be one imperative that the guy sees that there are no other options or doesn't have any other options.
Okay. In other words, the idea that he may not really be completely committed to really going on and becoming
a disciple. John 6 experience. So from that point, after he said, well, how about you, man? Would you like to go? And I said, we have another place to go. I think it was that point was the turning point in these men's minds as well. And they threw out all other options. It was all the way in.
Okay. Right. This is an important factor. Okay, let's have some more here.
Considering that, you know, well, the time factor, I'm here, but I don't know how exactly to say this. But it takes, it's easy to get a guy to meet the profile of Navigator Disciple. In fact, he can do that just by being around. He doesn't necessarily have to have convictions in order to reach that thing. And so we spend a lot of time after that building conviction, just in the basics and things like that. And then, so a guy has to get those things in his life, and then you've got the element of the whole idea of the vision of multiplication is caught rather than taught, and it takes time for that thing to be caught.
Okay, I'll put this down, another thing of length of time, but that is to build conviction. What was the other one you mentioned? Conviction and
vision.
Vision, yeah, vision.
Catching vision.
Right, in other words, just the... you just can't have a couple, three classes and get conviction and vision and all. It's just, there's a big process. It's a time. It just takes quite a bit of time to do that. Right, okay.
Timing was brought up in our group. Timing of when to challenge the man at that point of decision right on your turn.
Okay.
Oh, I wanted to do that.
Okay, when he should make a commitment.
Yeah, the idea of pressure production, because the numbers in the maximum really isn't qualified.
Okay. Pressure production. These are all certainly factors, and I think the reason for us discussing them here is recognizing them and figuring out what we can do about them will help us in our own disciple making. Okay, any others?
Prayerlessness.
On the part of the...
of the guy who's making the ends.
Okay.
Matthew 6 is if you ask, you will receive. Rather than seeing the secret of the Lord. And Peter said, your faith is fulfilled by faith for you that won't.
Okay, lack of prayer, yes, for the guys who are becoming disciple makers, yeah, on our part.
No problem.
Okay. Okay.
Maturity also the first time gets that little bit with the maturity experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Rich.
Say, what about this thing? You're not being part of the problem. You say that Jesus is being looking for the people on the ground.
Okay.
Unwillingness to train. Unwillingness to get ourselves out to train for the person. I mean, hard enough on the day that this training will allow.
Okay. Not being hard enough on. Okay, let me put also with this, or it's not being hard enough on him, but also that has to do with not knowing the man. In other words, what you're saying, I think, see if I say it back, is that if you're not hard enough on him in situations, you think he is a certain thing, but then you find out later he's not. In other words, you don't really know the man.
And fear of the implications. Such as he thinks he's got to be now staff, or he sees guys who are not 30 years old or married and says, but I've got to wait until 30 before I'm married, or you know, any of these indirect things have kind of come up.
Yeah, that's some implication. Okay, and that would be on the part of the guy who is commitment to becoming.
Maybe he's got to be now staff or go do all these other things.
The implication of being a disciple maker. Okay.
By your taking into account the differences of individuals.
Okay. Okay, not allowing for different types of individuals.
We had a couple related, I think, to Dave's pressure of time and production, but one is the idea that maybe we're trying to train too many men at once, and that's part of the cause of all the
Yeah, okay, I'll put that separate because that, I think it's a significant point on this, trying to train too many at one time.
I'd suggest just the reverse of that, that training to the point of becoming disciple makers, not just an individualistic process, but that it's a process involving the influence of many people's lives. So look at it from an individualistic point of view, and the individual process.
The team role in disciple making, I'll put. In other words, there are a number of people who have a part. In, okay. Is this part of what we're talking about here, sort of the environment? Yeah. I'll put that together, training environment. Okay. Any others? Our time's up. Any other pressing ones?
Besides,
I'm out.
The busyness of the ministry and our ministry gets rolling so much to maintain the machinery of it. Man-to-man time declines, or the disciple and disciple leader get qualified in ministry skills, but the quality of life is lacking. Character, which again is a time factor.
Okay, Dave.
I don't know if it's up or not. The pride that keeps us from really opening up and sharing the failure of the men, or the lack of real openness of the real responsibility.
Right. Okay, anything else?